Good morning. How's everyone today? Good. Well, I just want to give a word of thanks to Wade. I sprung it on him on Sunday last week. I said, hey, would you like to lead singing sometime? And he said, sure. And I said, how about next Sunday? And he got this panicked look on his face. but I think he's done a wonderful job. So afterwards, let him know that you're proud of him. So. And I also like that he gave a shout out to singing school and that people of all ages, especially our young ladies like Olga, and we have to be careful the way we say this, all ages are invited. So we're thankful that that school exists and is raising up new leaders and new people who are willing to lead worship. I just wanted to say welcome as well to Calvin and Judy. If you haven't gotten to see them yet, Calvin was the minister here. We got the joy of serving together for 2 years, and he retired on me back in December. and I think he is far happier that way, I have a feeling. I know Judy probably is, but we're thankful to have them with us. They're running around, traveling all over. They're going to be going to Abilene this afternoon. So make sure you stop by, give them a hug, say hello to them, and let them know that they're loved. Also, just by one more piece of announcement, next week we will have another guest speaker. The Meyer family, Robert Teague and their boys, will be here. Robert is a missionary in Angola, which is in southern Africa, just north of South Africa. they have been there about 5 years, I believe, and are doing some pretty amazing work. He's going to be here speaking to us on Sunday, telling us about a little bit about what they do. And then you're also, anyone who's here is invited. There's a free meal here on Tuesday night at 6:30. So a week from this Tuesday, he's going to be talking in depth about a lot of their work and the things that they're up to. So we'd love for anybody who can to come and to be a part of that. It'll be great food, a great chance just to be together, and you can hear more about the things that they're doing. So. All right. The book Kisses from Katie tells the story of Katie Davis, a young woman who at the age of 17 spent a summer living in Uganda. She worked with an orphanage, and she fell in love with the people, the place, and most of all with the children. And so as she came back to the States and as she finished out her senior year, she made a decision that she would go back there and she wanted to live and work in Uganda. And at the age of 18, she moved to Uganda, started working with a group of children, and has spent the last 7 years of her life there. She founded a ministry by the name of Amazima, a nonprofit that helps orphan children be able to live with the members of their extended family by providing support in ways like giving food and clothing and the medical expenses and school fees and supplies, things that their extended family couldn't afford to take care of for them. But this ministry will then partner with people here in the U.S. and other places to help these students stay with their families. And currently more than 750 children are being supported through their work. And Katie adopted 13 Ugandan girls. And yes, you heard that correctly. At the age of 18, she became a mother and kept adding to her number. Girls whose parents had died of disease and starvation and who had no one else on earth to take care of them. And now she is only 25 and still the mother of 13 girls. The book uses the first-person narrative and is also interspersed with stories taken from her own blog and her personal journal she keeps. And she tells the story in the book of one day she found her children digging in the trash. So they were going through all the different things that she had just discarded. And although they had lots of toys in the house, they were making cities out of old boxes and purses from old bags and used dental floss and using toilet paper rolls to make things like binoculars and glasses. And she became really kind of flustered and frustrated watching her children play. And then she writes how she had a spiritual revelation. And so Katie says this, "My goofy, trash-loving children are constant reminders of God. They take things that I see as used, broken, and dirty, and they see treasure. Can you imagine? God looks at everyone, broken, old, dirty, probably a whole lot more exciting than an old toilet paper roll, and sees treasure. Something he loves dearly. Something that he would die for." Wow. In essence, God sees treasure where we often see trash. And as we look at the world around us, it's pretty easy to see brokenness. We see it in the unjust systems that take place in our world and in our own government. We hear it on the nightly news and read it in our daily paper and see it on the internet. We see it in the faces of people we meet and the students in our class, the workers in the local restaurant, the co-workers we work with, the fellow parents we know through different outings. We see it as we drive down the road or as we watch television. And as we look in people's eyes, we might see fear and failure, worry and doubt, shame and grief, loss and lack of joy. Or we might see anger and hostility, frustration and fury, resignation and resentment, lack of hope, and full of hate. We see a world of brokenness. And it's easy to look at our world and see the despair and feel the brokenness and feel that the world is not much better off than a trash heap, that people are broken or damaged beyond hope. But that is the amazing and wonderful and beautiful thing about God. Where we see hopelessness, God sees hopefulness. Where we see brokenness, God brings restoration. Where we sense despair, God shows love. And we might see the world as broken and damaged, but I think God sees these situations as bruised reeds and smoldering wicks. There's this obscure little passage found in Isaiah 42 in which Isaiah refers to the coming Messiah. And he states this, "Here is my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him, and he will bring justice to the nations. He will not shout or cry out or raise his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out. And in faithfulness he will bring forth justice." And I love the image that Isaiah uses here, the bruised reed that is limp and lifeless, yet God will support it and prop it up and strengthen it and conform it back to the shape that it's meant to be. And we see a smoldering wick about to give up its life, but this Messiah continues to let it burn with his help. And it's this obscure little verse that Matthew chooses to quote in Matthew chapter 12. And it's a very interesting place to quote it because Matthew has been explaining about Jesus' confrontation with the Pharisees over two things that were troubling them. First, they argue with Jesus about his disciples picking a head of grain and eating it as they walk along the road on the Sabbath. And Jesus begins to just talk to them about how kind of silly this argument is, and he earns their ire. And then the very next story, Jesus on another Sabbath heals the withered hand of a man who has never been able to really work a day in his life because of his hand. And he earns the Pharisees' hatred. And in fact, this is the very story in which Matthew tells us for the first time that the Pharisees decide it's time to kill Jesus and get him out of the way. And then Matthew follows with this little verse. Aware of all of this, Jesus withdrew from that place. A large crowd followed him, and he healed all those who were ill. And this was to fulfill what was spoken of through the prophet Isaiah. "Here is my servant in whom I have chosen, the one I love in whom I delight, and a bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out until he has brought justice through to victory." What Matthew does here is he sees Jesus as the fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy. That Jesus will take something that is broken and lifeless, and through his loving care, he will restore it back to hope and wholeness. And that is because Matthew sees Jesus as a pattern of compassion. As I read through the book of Matthew, I'm always struck. It's such an intriguing gospel because Matthew presents Jesus as inherently Jewish. He traces his lineage back to that of David. He shows Jesus as the fulfillment of all these Old Testament prophecies that were spoken of. He has Jesus fulfilling and doing all these numerous Jewish customs and rituals throughout his lifetime. He makes a point of presenting Jesus as very Jewish in the way that he looks. But then Matthew goes to great pains to also show him doing very un-Jewish type things. He does things that make him clean, unclean, and unwholesome according to their ideas. Matthew's Jesus touches lepers. He hangs out with sinners. He heals on the Sabbath. He irks the religious leaders, and he prophesies the destruction of their temple. And Matthew, in the midst of his gospel, goes out of his way to show that compassion was more important for Jesus than ritual purity. And according to Matthew, here is how Jesus' ministry begins. Jesus goes throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the people. News about him spread all over Syria, and the people brought to him all those who were ill with various diseases, those suffering severe pain, the demon-possessed, those having seizures, and the paralyzed, and he healed them all. And then Matthew provides us with a timeline of Jesus' ministry. He stops for 3 chapters to go through the Sermon on the Mount, but then the very next things that he does is tells us all the ways that Jesus shows up for people. In chapter 8, verses 1 through 4, Jesus reaches out and touches a leper, making himself religiously and ritually impure. He then heals the Gentile centurion's servant in chapter 8, 5 through 13. He then heals Peter's mother-in-law in the very next 2 verses. He spends all night driving out demons in the verses just after that. Then it tells us he goes over to a Gentile region, the Gerasenes, and he drives demons out of 2 men while he is there. He forgives, and then he heals a paralyzed man in chapter 9. Jesus calls Matthew a tax collector, someone that everyone else hates, to come and to follow him. And then not only that, he sits down and has dinner with him and his sinner friends. Jesus heals the bleeding woman, and he raises Jairus' daughter, both of which actions make him religiously impure again. Jesus heals 2 blind men, and then he heals a demon-possessed man who is mute. And all of this, just these 2 chapters, what we see is a pattern of compassion that shows up in Jesus' life and ministry. And Matthew summarizes it with a very simple phrase. News of all of this spread throughout the land and all throughout that region, which I think is a huge understatement. The word is spreading far and wide that here is a man who can do amazing things. But all of this highlights a very major point that I want us to realize this morning. For Jesus, acts of compassion weren't a small part of his ministry. They were an integral component of his mission. Jesus doesn't heal because it makes him popular. He doesn't drive out demons to show his power. He doesn't hang out with sinners because their food was better, and he doesn't touch lepers to show how cool he can be. No, he does this because these things were his identity. He was and he is compassionate. He provides care. He is content to be with people and fulfill their needs when he can. Some of these situations that Matthew lists are life-threatening. Others here are simply life-draining. But Jesus brings compassion to all of those that he interacts with and meets. And so as we come to our passage today, listen to the words that Matthew uses to describe Jesus. And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news or the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest field." What we find is that Jesus is traveling all over to every city and village that he can reach. He is teaching, he is preaching, and he is healing, and the people are responding. When they hear of his ministry and they see his care, they respond to him in droves. And to be frank, as I think about this, I get exhausted just thinking about what Jesus is doing. Which isn't right, because I'm just reading some pages. But in my own life, I often get compassion fatigue. This is often called, at least in kind of clinical terms, secondary traumatic stress. It's a feeling that a caregiver like a social worker or a first responder can experience from just the day in and day out interaction with the needs around them. As you give of yourself, you get tired of giving of yourself. You lose hope, you become anxious, you have a negative attitude. Does this sound familiar to anybody else? At times, this is how I feel. Sometimes we become so inundated with the needs that are around us that we stop wanting to respond. We see the problems in our world, the problems in our city, the wars and violence and natural disasters and disease, and we grow weary and we think, how can we do anything good? But what's amazing to me is that Jesus here has compassion when he sees these people, not compassion fatigue. When he sees the crowds, this becomes a holy moment for him. It's a teachable moment. And he gives his disciples advice to shape their lives and their ministry. Jesus looks at the mass of compassion, the mass of humanity, and has compassion. He sees their plight and knows their situations, and he is moved to respond. Where we might see potential chaos, Jesus sees kingdom possibilities. Jesus sees compassion as an integral part of his mission and as an integral part of the kingdom of God. And so he calls his disciples to see the possibilities. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. What's so striking to me about this is that Jesus' ministry is found both inside and outside of the synagogue. Yes, we are told that he spoke and teaches and preaches and proclaims to the people in the synagogue, and the gospel was his focus. But then he also tells us that compassion is a huge part of the gospel. And I love the word here, compassion. It's the word that Matthew uses to describe how Jesus feels. And in Greek, it's a word that means to feel inwardly in one's gut. It's a feeling that strikes at our core when we see someone in need. And there's kind of a phrase I learned in Spanish. The word is the same as in English almost, compasión, to have compassion. But there's also kind of a fun way. It also sounds like the phrase compasión, just one letter change, which means with passion. And so the idea is that you can have compassion towards people with passion, with love. You can be drawn towards wanting to give. And we find here that Jesus becomes our model of this, that he is passionate about showing compassion. And he wants his followers to be that passionate as well. Compassion has been a big part of our mission here at West University Church of Christ in our history. Just think about some of the things that we do. We support Impact, which reaches out and ministers in amazing ways to the Fourth Ward area and really all throughout Houston itself. We support Lifeline Chaplaincy, a Church of Christ organization of chaplains that ministers in all the various hospitals of the Texas Medical Center. Almost every Sunday we have visitors here who are here from Texas Medical Center, who are here as patients or as family members or as friends supporting. And we provide them love and care. And if they stay for very long, we often develop some sort of relationship with them and get to know them well. Families like the Cothams and the Chapins and the Adamses and others who have been here for long terms with us. And these visitors become a chance for us to show the compassion of Jesus to those around us. The church here has spent many years supporting the Caleb ministry in Kenya. And it's a ministry that provides ongoing funds for a microloan program helping Kenyan widows overcome poverty by becoming self-sufficient entrepreneurs. And our church is providing not just a handout to these ladies, but a way to give them a hand up to help them overcome poverty on their own. And this program that we've been supporting will be self-sustaining sometime in the next year, 18 months. And each week, our auditorium Bible class takes up funds, and the funds that they've just taken up for missions are being given to build a well, to dig a well in Kenya, to provide clean and sustainable water to a village there. This is a church that has a compassionate heart. We look for ways to love and to serve. We do yearly projects like the toys for Medina Children's Home, or the Christmas bags for Impact, or the dinners people like the Colsons have hosted for Impact. Our teens look for ways to serve in the community around us. In fact, just a few weeks ago, went and worked at a local 5K run. Compassion is an integral part of the mission of our church. And Jesus gives us a few keys how we can continue to be that compassionate to those around us, to develop compassionate hearts and lives. Just quickly as we work through this, Jesus tells us we have to find ways to be out among the people. As we saw, Jesus doesn't just hang out with people like himself, but instead he gets out in the world and he travels And he sees people in the places in which they live so he can know how it is that he can help them. Second, Jesus has eyes that sees the need around him. He looks at the crowd. Because he was constantly out among the people, he could see the places in which the kingdom could begin to break in. And third, Jesus prays about these situations and challenges others to do the same. Compassion is an integral part of the mission of Christ. It's an integral part of the mission of our church. And I want us to think for a moment. We just worked through some ways in which our church shows compassion, but I want you to think, in what ways can I show compassion in my own life this week? Think about that. How can I show compassion in my own life this week? And I imagine something just crossed through your mind, an image, a person, a situation, an opportunity. In what way can you show compassion to that individual this week? I want to challenge you to write it down or tell someone to pray, to go out and to do something about it. In our own bulletin this week, there are just a couple of ways in which you can do that. Roy is organizing an event on October 15th. It's the International Day of Remembrance for Pregnancy and Infant Loss. And as a church, we're going to offer a time in which we can come and be together and support one another and encourage one another in the name of Christ, all those who have undergone this situation. And whether or not miscarriage or infant loss is a part of your life, we all know people who it is. And it's a way for us to come and show compassion on that day. The Lackeys are working with Big Love, a ministry here that helps children who are undergoing cancer treatment, specifically at Texas Children's. And today they're selling t-shirts to support the work that they're doing, and all the money there is going towards fundraising for the Big Love ministry. So you're welcome to come and see them. We know of different ways, if you're interested in helping the refugees in Europe who are undergoing just a lot of the crisis going on in the Middle East right now, we can put you in touch in that way. Those are some big ways, but there are lots of small ways as well in which we can show compassion to those around us. But what's amazing about this story to me is that as I look at the world, I often see bruised reeds and smoldering wicks. But where I see bruised reeds, God sees plentiful harvests. Where I see smoldering wicks about to give up life, God sees the possibility and the potential for a roaring fire. Where I see trash, God sees treasure. And all it takes is a little compassion. We serve a compassionate and gracious God, a God who is slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, a God who extends love to thousands and forgives, as he says, wickedness, rebellion, and sin. And Jesus shows us what that looks like as God made flesh who extends compassion to those around him. And we want, as a church, want to extend compassion to anyone here today who needs it. If you don't know Jesus, we'd love to teach you about that God who is compassionate and gracious. We'd love to be able to just introduce you more deeply to him. If you need somebody to show you compassion in your own life, if it's just been a tough week or a tough month or a tough year or a tough life, that's understandable. And we're here to pray with you, to encourage you, to lift you up, to cry with you. If there's any way we can just help you ease and bear your burdens, we'd love to do that. Or if we can rejoice with you and celebrate with you, that's why we're here too. We serve a God who is compassionate, and we want to be people of compassion. At this time, we're going to sing a song and offer a moment of invitation. If there's any way we can bless you today, come to the front as we stand and as we sing.